Welcome to the Fresh Start Podcast, brought to you by attorneys Gina Cho and Jeff Curl of JC Law Group, whose practice is dedicated to bankruptcy for individuals and small businesses. Thanks for joining us. I'm Matt Hayes. Please note that this podcast is not legal advice. For more information, you can visit jclawgroup.com. Now let's welcome Gina and Jeff to our 12th podcast. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
A couple weeks ago, online, I was reading an article that, Gina, I believe I sent off to you with the headline that said, "Can you be too broke to file for bankruptcy?" That idea, that thought, never even crossed my mind. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and about income and how that plays into bankruptcy. But, Gina, let's start with that. I'm going to go to you first with that question. Is it possible to even be too broke to file for bankruptcy?
Yes. So if your only source of income is, let's say, Social Security, which would be protected from the collection efforts of creditors, then you could theoretically be too broke to file for bankruptcy. Or if you're unemployed and you don't have any source of income, then yeah, I mean, bankruptcy may not even be necessary.
Too broke in the sense that you can't afford to pay someone to help you with it. I guess in theory, someone could go who has only Social Security could file on their own. But, you know, as we've talked about before, that's as good as cutting your own hair or performing surgery on yourself.
So then are there certain income like thresholds or limits that play into this? Because you see such a wide variety of people and corporations and businesses and organizations file. Are there certain limitations with that then, or is it pretty much fair game for anybody?
It depends on which bankruptcy we're talking about. So I guess we should start the conversation with Chapter 7 bankruptcy. In a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, there's no minimum income threshold. So you can make $500 a month and still file for bankruptcy. There is, however, a maximum income threshold, and there is a test that you have to pass. It's called a means test. And sometimes I'll get clients that call me up and say, oh, you know, I already ran my own means test, and I already know I don't qualify for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. But the means test is not just a straight calculation, but there's different things that we have to take into consideration, like your actual expenses. It's not as straightforward as it may seem.
The means test is really complex and always evolving and the subject of a lot of litigation and a lot of challenges, and it's changing all the time. And we were at a conference with about 1,000 other bankruptcy attorneys, and one of the topics was the means test. And the two big things are what counts as income and what counts as an expense to offset your income. And there were probably 1,000 people in there with 1,000 different views on the topic. And it's a constant source of evolving views by the courts as well about what that means. And so when we have people say, I filled out an online form and I know I don't qualify, I wouldn't take that at its face for anything, because, you know, there are some actual expenses you can take, such as your taxes, your health care expenses. But then there are some that are government oriented that say you get so much for housing, you get so much for food, but sometimes you can make an exception to that. And there's always these exceptions to exceptions. And what do you count as income? And when do you count it? What happens if you get a bonus at a certain point? What happens if you're a teacher and you're only paid 9 months out of the year? There's all kinds of things that there's all kinds of ways to manipulate this and work with it. So that's a huge, complicated area that I wouldn't recommend that you go out and self-diagnose.
Well, then along with that, then if there's like you said, if you're in a room full of 1,000 bankruptcy attorneys and there's 1,000 different opinions, who makes that ultimate call then of what counts and what doesn't count? Is it going to vary with each case, or is it just kind of a catch-22 and see what happens and throw it out to the wind? How does that all work then?
Generally speaking, there's no judge that's reviewing every single case. Usually what happens is I file the case and there's a Chapter 7 trustee that's assigned to the case, and they do a review and just make sure that they agree with our opinion about all the deductions that's taken. And then there's also the United States trustee who overlooks all the Chapter 7 bankruptcies as well. So, I mean, there are certain guidelines. There are certainly gray areas where we can fight about, but there are sort of these black and white areas where certain deductions, like if you are actually making your mortgage payments and you're living in the residence, there's really no question about your ability to take that deduction, which would offset your income.
It's a product of local culture. Bankruptcy is a federal law, and so people think it's the same everywhere. It is so different all over the country. It's different within the different circuits. We're in the Ninth Circuit. And then within that, it's different within California. We're in the Northern District of California. It's different within the Northern District. It's even different within all the divisions here in the Northern District, San Jose, San Francisco, Oakland, and San Jose. And then by trustee even, it's a product of just going through the process and seeing which judges are going to be assigned and which trustees are assigned to your case and knowing the local culture and the local rules as well. It's just after spending time with it, you get to know what you may, where you're pushing the boundaries and where you're not.
It kind of goes back to that whole thing we talked about cutting your own hair. If you're doing it all online, you have absolutely no clue what cards you're going to be handed to when you go through the process on your own as it is. And they may not, whatever that algorithm is that you used online, it definitely may not be what the judge or the trustee that gets your case uses at the same, you know, uses the same type of judgment with it.
Yeah, it's hard for me to emphasize that without making it sounding self-serving, but go watch a bunch of people who try to file their own case and see what happens. I'm not kidding.
So there's one sort of very important exception to the means test. So typically speaking, someone that doesn't pass the means test wouldn't be able to qualify for Chapter 7 bankruptcy, but there is one large exception, and the exception is that if more than 50% of your debt was for a non-consumer purchase, so for example, if you had a business line of credit or a small business loan or something like that, or you used your credit cards to pay for business expenses, and that debt is more than 50% of your total debt, then you don't actually have to pass the means test.
Yeah, it can be other things like taxes, for example. If the majority of your debt is tax related, that's not considered a consumer debt. That means you fall into a non-consumer case. That means you don't have to take the means test. It doesn't apply to you. So there can be lots of debts. If you have a piece of property purchased as a rental, that's a business income. That's a business debt. Those aren't your typical home mortgages. You can use that to qualify and not have to pass the means test. So this also is a somewhat gray area in some portions. I mean, if it's taxes and things like that, that's a given. But there are some way you can push the boundaries and maybe qualify for Chapter 7, whereas you wouldn't if you had to take the means test.
So for example, like student loans is one of those sort of gray areas as to whether certain type of student loans, like graduate schools, is considered non-consumer debt.
But undergrad is.
Undergrad is considered consumer, I believe. Right, Jeff?
I believe so.
Wow.
And the graduate, really? Though, is, think of it in terms of like doing a professional school that I don't know why it's considered different. And I believe me, that's a...
Yeah, so the 4 years of fun you had, I guess that's like, you know, going to the bar and putting on the credit card, same type of deal. But then when it comes to, you know, actually getting serious about school, then it's considered that business side.
Yeah, I guess because you consume a beer, you're a consumer.
That's right. In graduate school, you're not doing that. You're actually studying to get that degree for whatever.
Well, I don't know about that.
No,
I don't know what graduate
grad school.
You guys are the ones with a higher degree, not me. You could speak for that at that point. But then even then too, like you said, if you used your credit cards or you took a small business loan all out on that. So that's if you're filing, if you use your own personal money to help grow a business instead of using the incorporated business money in that too. It seems like to be so many thousands of different ways to skin this cat.
There could. And it, you know, when you have something like that too, though, the burden is on you. You can't just have five credit cards with Discover, Chase, and American Express or whoever and just say it's non-consumer without the ability to back it up if you need to.
All right. So we've talked about Chapter 7. Let's talk about Chapter 13. What type of income thresholds are we talking about here with this side of bankruptcy?
So Chapter 13 is calculated differently than a Chapter 7. In a Chapter 13, you're going to repay back some portion of your debt. And how that's calculated is we take your gross income and then we subtract all of your necessary living expenses. So if you're unemployed, there's no way to pay your expenses unless you have like a family member that's going to pledge or contribute to your household. So that's sort of the minimum threshold, is that you have to be able to sustain yourself and be able to provide for all of your living expenses, as well as if you have a family, then you also have to be able to provide for your family as well.
Chapter 13 is like the opposite of a 7. A 7, you can have too much income and not qualify for a 7. And a 13, you need a minimum amount of income to sustain a plan to make a monthly payment. And that's what a term they call is feasibility. You must propose a feasible plan where you demonstrate that you have the income to pay back your daily living expenses plus a little bit to the creditors as is necessary.
And in a 13, it also kind of depends. Like if you want to keep your home, for example, you have to demonstrate your ability to be able to make your mortgage payments, your property tax payments, and your insurance payments, as well as any arrearages on your home. If you can't do that, then you can't keep your home. So in a 13, whatever you can actually afford to keep are those items that you're allowed to keep. Like same thing would go for a car, for example.
Now, when we're talking about these different types of income threshold for 7 versus 13 and how you want to ultimately have your discharge out, I think of self-employed people that may have a little bit harder time having more of a steady income versus maybe someone that has a 40-hour a week job that has a set yearly salary and they know exactly how much is coming in every single week and every single month. How does that play into both of these? And also with that question, is that type of income and how they get their income going to help push them towards Chapter 7 or Chapter 13?
Well, I'll take the 7. I'll let Gina do the 13. Is that with a 7, when you're self-employed and you have this income that's kind of fluctuating, it can help and hurt you. With the Chapter 7, you take the last 6 months of income, the previous 6 months, and you use that to average out and figure out whether you qualify for Chapter 7. And so if you can just wait, let's say you had some couple of huge months, if you can wait and let some of those big months drop off, you can kind of manipulate it so that you get in and have lower averages. By the same token, sometimes we have people who have had some big months and they can't wait to file, and you have to average those in. And so sometimes you can be stuck with it. There are ways around that. There are some case law that lets you get an exception to that, but that's harder. The thing with the 7 and self-employment and fluctuating income is timing. If you can work it and wait, a lot of times you can use it to your advantage.
And in Chapter 13, we actually use the same 6 month look back period. So we take the last 6 months and we average those last 6 months. So it can get a little bit tricky for self-employed folks because the last 6 months may not be an accurate reflection of what your income looks like going forward. So there's always kind of this massaging the numbers and playing around with it and trying to make your Chapter 13 feasible.
So it really depends on every person's situation. Every single one is going to be very different and very unique.
Yes, definitely.
Gina and Jeff, some great information. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
And thank you for joining us as well. For more information or to listen to other episodes of our podcast, just visit jclawgroup.com. JC Law Group is a debt relief agency under the United States Bankruptcy Code.